You're listening to Around Comics, episode 226, brought to you by InStockTrades.com, Afro Samurai, Shiguri Death Frenzy, and Netflix.
I can't say the Japanese names. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop on by.
And have some cake.
And have some cake.
Or
yeah,
pizza.
Mike Norton. If it's someone's birthday.
Yeah, Mike brought me cake.
It's your birthday.
It was your birthday.
Like 2 weeks
week
ago.
And a, well, yeah, like, it's a couple weeks ago. So,
hey there, folks. I'm Christopher Niesman, and thank you for listening. First of all, let me get you introduced to this week's all brand new spanking panel. First of all, is my partner in crime, is Brian Salazar.
Yo.
Hello.
What's up? I'm reading.
I'm up because I'm all hopped up on sugar from all that cake.
From the cake. Mike likes sugar. the butter cream.
Frosty. You're not a buttercream fan? Are you more of a whipped cream
fan? I'm more of a whipped cream fan. I like the whipped cream. I'll eat the buttercream.
You mean Cake Man?
Cake Man, Mike Norton, yes.
He is truly Cake
Man. But I, yeah, I'm
welcome
not gonna,
to the
I
cake
don't turn
cast.
Down free cake.
It's not the crank cast anymore. It's
the cake
cast. Our good friend, Mr. John Suntress, the host of Word Blue.
Hello, how are you?
All right, back from San Francisco.
Back from the dead.
Yes, oh. Beautiful WonderCon. Although that was weeks ago. Now that'll be a month ago by the time this thing airs. But
this is the first time I've seen you. No. We went to Watchmen.
We saw Watchmen together.
I was in a Watchmen haze last time I saw
That's
you.
That's right. Indeed.
And our special guest this week, multiple return guest here, the author of such titles as Clumsy and Little Things, and also the new book Funny Misshapen Body. The owner of that funny misshapen body is Mr. Jeffrey Brown.
Hi.
His body's normal. What are you talking about? Yeah, we're the endomorphs over here. What are you talking about?
You do not have a funny misshapen body.
I wear baggy clothes.
Oh,
to hide the funny misshapen body.
Well, it's good to see you. It's been a long time since we talked to you on the show.
Yeah.
Good to have you back.
What have you been doing other than drawing comics? Anything else? We'll get to the comics.
Watching my kid.
Watching your kid, that's right.
That is one cute kid last time I saw him at Wizard Chicago last year.
Yeah.
Cute little redhead. Where do you get that? Is his mother a redhead?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right. That explains
But it gets blonder in the summer and...
Because he's baked
like
in the sun.
It's like a tree.
We set him outside. He's like sun tea.
He's got to get sweet.
He's sun aged.
And you were at Staple?
And I was at Staple last week.
Okay.
It was good. Yeah. It's a good show.
That's 2 weeks in a row that Austin is a happening place because they're South by Southwest.
South by Southwest.
Has just taken place as we...
It's... Right as we speak, I think.
Yeah. Starting out this week.
Taking place.
Yeah. There you go. Before we get started in our comics talk, I want to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. And InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. And right now you can get our book club selection, The Adventures of Luther Arkwright, for a fantastic 35% off the cover price. It can be yours for the low price of $12.32.
That's a hell of a deal because that is a very hefty trade and an excellent book. And Sal, you probably know better. Have I heard correctly that a volume 3? In the story is coming?
Oh, I thought there was word of that, but I'm not sure. I think there might be because there's been like a resurgence of that book.
Uh-huh.
It originally came out in...
I want to say 80s or
Yeah,
early
it
90s?
Was in the 80s.
Tell you what, anyone that thinks that Morrison writes some wacky shit, check out some Brian Talbot.
Yeah, Brian Talbot.
Oh, my God.
A funny guy. Funny guy.
Yeah.
I met him in San Diego in 07, and just he floored me.
That is a dense book. So I'm enjoying it. I'm actually going on vacation soon, and I'm taking it with me. So we'll see how it reads in Mexico.
David Tennant, Doctor Who, is in the audiobook.
Oh, really?
And plays Luther. and it's quite good.
Yeah, that's cool. There's an audio, I linked to that in our post on it. That yeah, there's an audiobook that was done of it. And you used to be able to actually read the whole thing online at Brian Talbot's website, but he has since just put up samples of it.
Okay,
I want you to go buy that book.
And are we burning incense?
Burning?
Yeah, no. I think somebody burned a mule in here earlier, and okay. I think that's why the incense has been cracked out. But now, it smells like a record store in 1970.
Yeah, it's the local comic shop / head shop now.
Do you have Don McLean's American Pie? It's in the back, man. It's in the back.
Music for this episode. I have. Yes.
Who did you choose?
What? I haven't picked it. Shall we let? Well, Jeffrey pick?
What?
Sure. Yeah. What? The eclectic mind of
Jeffrey. We spotlight a different band or solo artist every episode. And last week it was the Black Keys, as suggested by Dave Stewart, Colorist Supreme. But yeah, you got any bands? Yeah,
what band?
What if it's like really obscure?
It can be fine.
Like.
As long as you can find
if I can find it on like
that's a lot of pressure to
Amazon
narrow it
MP3
down to,
or that, I'm fine.
I'm just gonna go with the last album I listened to today, which is Nico Case's new album.
You are so awesome because I wanted to pick that. Nice. He would have given me so much shit if I had picked that because it's Nico Case and she's awesome and Sal would have given me shit about it.
Give him shit about just about anything he listens to.
Not my favorite Nico Case album yet. There's a couple. There's two or three songs I'm not totally digging, but I think it's a very strong
I get the iTunes with like the 30-minute bonus. It's just crickets at night.
Yeah. I'm actually a big fan of Fox Confessor. Is one of my favorites of hers. So and Blacklisted. Black, they're all good. Blacklisted.
Never again will we have a guest pick.
Wait, can I have a like backup? A B-side pick?
Since it is a Nico Case spotlight, can I mix some New Pornographers in there? Maybe.
Oh, definitely.
Okay,
definitely.
Sweet. You'll do the New Pornographers.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeffrey. I'm all
turn that down.
I'm all happy now. All right.
I'm picking all the music.
You were all happy about the Black Keys.
I was.
I like the old 97s a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I was very excited. Got to dig that Bloodshot Records band. You have, sir, a new book out. We had talked about it a minute ago. Funny Misshapen Body, and this is the second book that is published by Simon & Schuster. It's actually Touchstone, which
Touchstone
is an imprint. So you're in the big leagues now. You're not messing with these.
I was.
With these.
Now this book's out.
You're done.
That's it.
Is that it?
You know.
Yeah.
Did you get the letter already?
Back to mini comics.
And we'll joke.
You had a good run, Jeff.
Sorry. Back to stapling stuff.
We'll joke about publishing in for different comic book publishers, but you know, you in the past have published through Top Shelf, which is one of our favorite publishers, and by no means we would ever say anything bad about Top Shelf. The great products there, but it is exciting to have stuff put through
and,
Simon & Schuster.
I mean, and I'm still doing stuff with Top Shelf, so it was just an opportunity to work with a bigger publisher who can reach a different market. Simon & Schuster obviously has a much bigger presence in the book market than Top Shelf does, and
for now,
for now, you know, could change. And I mean, Top Shelf definitely has a bigger presence now than you know when I started.
Sure, absolutely,
working with them. 7-8 years ago, whatever it was.
Has it been that long? Was Clumsy your first book there?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. And then, what are some of the other books that you published through Top Shelf? I know Big Head,
and
your Sulk series,
and I'm Going to Be Small, Incredible Change Bots.
Still one of my favorites.
Yeah. So and then most recently the Sulk series, which is, what I'm going to be working on for the foreseeable future. It's supposed to be quarterly, so I'm still drawing the third issue right now.
So you kind of have your own imprint at Top Shelf with Sulk is kind of a ongoing Jeffrey Brown comic there.
Yeah, I think it was just kind of a way to let myself do different things that like Funny Misshapen Body is this 300-plus page book, and it's got it's a book, and the Sulk books are thinner, and it's ideas and things I have that Like, it's harder to fill up the same amount of space.
Yeah, to do
like,
a 300-page.
But doing them as a series, even though each issue is totally different, they all kind of have the same sensibility. And
the first one was a Big Head story, correct? Yep. And then the second one is something that you had teased us with for, gosh, it seemed like 2 years we had heard about this. And, John, you would have you read his second Sulk, the Deadly Awesome?
No, I've only read Big Head.
Deadly Awesome, which I'll let you explain.
It's my I guess my tribute to mixed martial arts, which of course will come as a surprise to everyone who's listening to this, thinking like, that's the guy who did Clumsy. He's so sensitive.
And he likes a good beat down.
Yeah, but I like
you're a big UFC guy, mixed martial arts.
Yeah, mixed martial arts.
Cool.
It is a fantastic read. I loved it.
I'd like to read that.
It is.
80 page fight scene.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Of course.
Yeah. Continuous fight scene.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
What I loved about it is that, you know, you can say it's an 80 page fight scene, but it's not like a, you know, image 90s image comic, you know, big explosions and laser beams. It was.
Well, that's all in
there. That was the original plan. And then. I realized that to do that for 80 pages didn't work so well. I needed to find another way to keep myself interested.
Well, and you did it. You know what I loved about it is that it was, while it was certainly a fight scene, it was, you were inside the heads of the two combatants, and it was, you know, their thought process through the fight, and, you know, figuring out what the other guy is doing, and their strategies, and their corner men. And so John is a big boxing fan, and actually a boxing reporter for several years. And so I think that you would really enjoy the mental very, very much the thinker's part of the fight.
It took a long time for me to warm up to mixed martial arts because, you know, when UFC first came out, there really were no rules.
Yeah,
and it was so brutal.
Yeah,
and, it was tough to see.
It's a much different sport.
Absolutely.
Now. It's, you know, there's rules in place, and it's much more technical.
It's not some guy pulling a razor out of his boot or anything.
Yeah, or even, I mean, just even, you know, some of the things they had, you know, like just certain elbow strikes and, you know.
Striking somebody when they were on the ground.
Yeah, like.
Their head's on their
ground.
Yeah,
like you can't have a guy lying there and you're stomping on his head like.
Exactly.
Stuff to actually protect the fight.
Yeah, well, yeah. And
it was what was keeping the sport from really, in the United States, being regarded as a serious sport. And finally, guys like Dan Cook went to the commissions and said, okay, what do we need to do to make this a legitimate sport? What rules do you want to see us do? And, you know, the commission was surprised that they actually listened to them. And now you see,
and the popularity took off.
Oh, my God. Wow. It's totally eclipsed boxing. And I have to admit, I've become more of a fan as the years have gone on. And now I really do enjoy watching.
Well, wrestling was my sport growing up.
Sure.
And so, you know, I see, you know, I love watching the grappling of it. It's incredibly intense. And, I mean, these are skilled athletes. And, yeah, there's a brutal part to the sport.
Bastards,
but,
too.
Man, they are tough. But yeah, you're talking about, you know, you're kind of an unassuming guy whenever people meet you in person. But yeah, you love MMA and you're a huge hockey fan.
Yeah, yeah.
You love blood sports.
I do.
All right, it's true.
That's right.
If there were gladiators,
yeah, like
today,
baseball, like.
Boring. Nobody like, leaves. Nobody gets hurt.
You know, if there's a commercial on for SportsCenter, you know, showing the big bench clearing brawl, I might watch SportsCenter for the highlights. But you know,
I forget. Was it Jake Geldof? There's a great indie cartoonist that did old hockey stories, true hockey stories. Was it Jake Geldof or it's one of those guys?
Rob Ullman, who has a little comic called Old Time Hockey Tales.
Yes, it is Rob Ullman.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great little book.
Yes, indeed.
Well, talking about, you know, hockey, one of your good friends and another Top Shelf creator, Jeff Lemire, is maybe the biggest hockey fan I've ever met. I think honest to God, I think he came to the Windy City show last year so he could go to a Blackhawks game.
I'm sure that's the case. Yeah, you know, he's Canadian. They're all hockey fans.
But his Essex County is.
He has like skates and stuff. He has
Canadian.
A stick.
They come out of the womb and get skates.
I was going to say, I don't think you're allowed in the playground. unless you like hockey. Yeah, Canada, that, that's, you know, pretty much.
They don't actually have playgrounds. They just have
ice.
Yeah, ice, ice rinks.
Close it down.
But anyway, tell us about funny misshapen body as Sal was over here giggling as he was looking through it.
I was laughing at the scene of you first taking a bong hit.
Yeah.
And then just sitting there going, Voltron. They've got Voltron. I was just, I don't know, for some reason that
it sounds really about right.
Yeah, that's nice. It was perfect. It was just like, I've been there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a perfect, you know.
You were there.
Yeah.
You were there with me.
I think I probably was. At least.
That was your Voltron on the shelf. Yeah, yeah. So funny misshapen body. It's autobiographical stories. And yeah, it's one of the things I've always tried to do with my work is I started out doing the autobiographical comics and then I go back and we'll do, you know, the stuff like Big Head or these, you know, different stories. And then I go back to the autobiographical stuff and funny misshapen body is kind of the story of how I ended up, at this point of how I became a cartoonist drawing autobiographical stories. And, so there's stories about high school all the way through art school and how just that evolution of where I at one point thought I was going to be a painter and was going to exhibit my paintings in New York galleries and ended up just doing what I thought I was going to do when I was a kid, which is draw comics.
Nice.
not for Marvel yet, but you know.
Well, you know, speaking of, you know, Marvel is doing the
anthology, the indie anthology.
Are you going to be involved with that, or any hopes?
They
to
haven't
be?
Asked me. I heard that anthology got scrapped, unless they've restarted.
They just
it.
Re-announced
they restarted it. Yeah.
Paul Pope is doing a story in it.
So Legion,
Jeffrey just threw his hands up in the air.
What do I got
to
do?
I went to bat for it. It was on the Comic Book Resources website. They had posted a couple of pages.
They'll learn eventually.
And I went on there and I said, I'd really love to see Jeffrey Brown's Wolverine story in this anthology, you know.
I don't think you're going to see the Wolverine story.
That's actually one of my prized possessions is that I have the Jeffrey Brown Wolverine mini comic at home. I keep it in very...
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Paul Pope.
No, who's editing it?
I don't know if it even said who was editing it.
Yeah, I'd almost be surprised if it wasn't CB, but it may not be. But that sounds like something CB would do.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that the editor that had was originally doing it left Marvel, I believe.
Oh, maybe
last
that was,
I heard.
Maybe
so
that was Andy Schmidt or somebody.
It was. His name was Aubrey.
Gene? No.
Aubrey.
Sorry.
Gene Autry.
Oh, it was Gene Autry.
There's, of course, Jim Aubrey, the former
Jim
CBS,
Aubrey, yeah,
the Smiling
sure,
Cobra.
Jim,
yeah. Who but
yeah,
CBS for
I would love to see you get involved with
yeah,
a project.
You know, I still have hopes that someday I will realize that dream of drawing
because
a Marvel
comic.
Because
you grew up a big superhero fan.
As a big superhero fan, and especially Marvel, X-Men was my first, the first comic I bought was X-Men issue 192.
John Romita Jr. Is that 192?
I don't have that kind.
I think
of
no
reference. I couldn't tell you.
That was about the Romita
yeah,
era.
Yeah, Chris Claremont years. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the whole series, but you know, all the way through like when Alan Davis was doing some stuff and
big fan.
With giant strides, and the woodsman failed to breach those fangs in time. So they dragged him through the underbrush, wearing three winter coats and a dirty.
You're one of our favorite comic book creators to talk to because, I mean, you still buy superhero comics. You still enjoy the capes and cowls, but you're obviously kind of dialed into the indie scene, and I mean, so you have a really wide knowledge base of what's going on in a lot of different areas of comics.
Yeah, and I think I kind of went through this phase where when I went off to college, I sold off my collection for beer money.
Well, apparently,
you know, stopped,
according to this comic, it wasn't beer.
Well, that was after college.
Oh, okay.
So, and I never paid for it. So.
Oh, that a boy.
Yeah, so I sold off my collection, stopped reading comics. I think I was actually still going to the comic book store every week. I'm just like, I had to still go every Wednesday, but it used to not be Wednesday.
Mondays.
It used to be Monday or was it Thursday. Okay. It switched days like a lot.
I remember when it was Mondays, but yeah.
I don't know. That'd be an interesting. You guys should do a show about new comics.
New comic day.
The evolution of the new comic day. How it came about. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So, it wasn't until 3 years after college, I was getting ready to move to Chicago, and, I'd still been going into comic stores and kind of rediscovered them and started off just really getting into all the indie stuff. Like Chris Ware and Dan Klaus were probably like the two big ones that got me reinterested. And then after kind of getting all that and then still wanting to read more, I kind of started to get back into superhero stuff. Mm-hmm. Like first, maybe as like a bit of nostalgia, like rebuying some of the old stuff I had growing up. And then, I think maybe the big breakthrough there was starting to read some Grant Morrison stuff and just kind of like broke that barrier for me again.
Yeah, it's like, wow, these are not the comics that I remember reading. They've grown up considerably. So,
was that like Animal Man or Arkham Asylum? Or
well, I read Arkham Asylum back.
Oh, okay.
Originally,
well, so this is early 90s. But, so like I didn't Doom Patrol and stuff like that. Or?
Well, no. I mean, I read Arkham Asylum, and then that was like right before I stopped. Reading it, but I don't think I had like had any concept when I started reading Grant Morrison again that he did Arkham Asylum until after I guess I started with The Invisibles, and Seven Soldiers of Victory and All Star Superman.
Oh, so this is recent stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of came back to the superheroes.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just in like the last few years.
Okay.
I guess so.
Yeah, it was honest. Kind of hammering on Bendis in our last episode, but yeah, Ultimate Spider-Man is one of the books that got me seriously back into comics. It's like, okay.
2000,
it's been
99.
Right around the turn of the millennia.
Sure.
But Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man and Brian K. Vaughan's Why the Last Man, and
100 Bullets was another one, too, that kind of bridges that gap between mainstream and alternative. It's
definitely
it's just its own genre.
Yeah, whenever you have a guy like Eduardo Risso, it's who I don't think is probably thought of as a mainstream style artist, even though he's done great work with Brian on Batman. But yeah, you look at the amount of European and South American artists that have come onto the scene, especially this decade. I think it may have been Josh Blaylock that said you could almost see each country as it got broadband, a rush of artists. Yeah, because they
pretty much.
Yeah, because they would be able to email samples and work via the internet. So as countries get broadband access, you see these artists from different countries. It's pretty amazing.
I had a chance to meet Tony DeZuniga in San Francisco at WonderCon, and he was part of that first wave of Filipino artists that came in the 70s. And yeah, it's just hearing him talking about mailing, pages and pages and stuff, and some stuff not making it, and really it wasn't like my dog ate my homework. It really was like, hey, I sent the story, I don't know what happened to
it. Got lost in the airmail. So a guy like Alex Nino,
I was gonna say Nino was right across from him too, and it was really cool seeing
Nino
those guys.
Was there.
Yeah.
Oh, he's so good. He's
and
so
it's good. In fact, I brought it's in the corner, I brought some art from WonderCon I wanted to show you guys anyway that I got.
Got me some Alex Nino original pages.
I didn't get anything from Alex, but I got a great Hex pencil sketch from De Zuniga that's just beautiful.
Nice.
And no, I really intend to talk to them. But you're right. It's funny because even back then, as a kid growing up in the 70s and early 80s, it was fun to see the European and Asian and South American art that was coming in, and it really it didn't. I think it hit me subconsciously that this stuff was different than the house styles of DC and Marvel. And now it's nice that there are even more sophisticated stories to match with the sophisticated art. And I think we're just It's a good time.
So, you know, and we look at the, you know, the buildup of foreign artists, especially in Europe and South America in the last few years. But the American mini comic, you're one of the more well known creators that has moved from mini comics to published work. Do you see this kind of work taking place in Europe or South America or Asia, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Having been to France and seeing, you know, they have like the similar scene where you have people, you know, self-publishing and starting out that way. And, you know, just the way, the cost of printing now to, you can print up a few copies of your, and with computers and being able to lay everything out. And, it's a lot easier to instead of, you know, toiling away and having no one see the work until someone wants to publish it, you can start building an audience by publishing it yourself.
The French version of Kinko's over there with, you know, French artists, you know, putting their books together. I guess. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, the...
I don't remember seeing a Kinko's.
La Kinko.
They have a different name for it.
It's speaking of Kinko's, I just finished reading Will Pfeiffer's Late Nights at Kinko's and all of his mini comics collected together. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people can self-publish now and put out a nice looking product. Yeah, that's print on
demand. Afro Samurai! Samuel L. Jackson returns in the sequel to the best-selling anime of 2007, Afro Samurai Resurrection. Afro Samurai avenged his father and found a life of peace, but a beautiful and deadly woman is forcing him back into the game. Starring Samuel L. Jackson and Lucy Liu, with new beats from the RZA featuring 2 hours of extras. Get the Blu-ray and DVD on February 3rd. Afro Samurai Resurrection. One brother, one path, 1,000 deaths.
Visit AfroSamurai.com for more details.
Any difference? We had mentioned earlier that this was the second of the books published through Simon & Schuster. Was there any difference for you in the creative process at all? I mean, were you working with an editor at Simon & Schuster? And was
I mean, when I signed on with Simon & Schuster, it was for two books, and with Little Things, the first book with them, that book was almost finished when we went to them. Whereas Funny in a Shape and Body, I didn't even have the script at that point. And so it was the first time where I had signed a deal for a book that I hadn't written already.
Yeah, didn't have it.
It was
it's like, shit, I got to do this now.
Usually with Top Shelf, it's, you know, I finish it and then give it to them and they put it out. You know, there's not the same kind of, whereas with Simon Schuster, it's like you finish the book a year before it comes out and then they, you know, they start doing advanced press and
the marketing, you know, they plan for it.
Yeah, they have, you know, they have all this different machinery in place before the book even comes out. So, I kind of struggled with Funny Misshapen and Body, where I'd actually drawn about 100 pages and it didn't feel right, and I was feeling all kinds of different pressures, and I scrapped those 100 pages and actually restarted drawing it and wrote it slightly. Changed the writings a bit.
Wow, that's a lot of work to do on something and then scrap it. That had to be a pretty difficult decision.
It was. I mean, but it just came down to, you know, I could tell, like, the last few pages I had drawn of those 100 where I could see myself, you know, like, losing interest and momentum. And it was, you know, do I force myself to draw another 300 pages not enjoying it, or do I start over and have to do all this work again? And it was, you know, I kind of
probably easier just to start over.
Yeah, I took a couple months of just agonizing over the decision, and then
if you're losing interest, then the reader, the chances are it's not going to have that same passion. You know, I was going to ask, whenever you approach a project like this that's going to be 200-300 pages, do you work up a full script and then draw it out, or do you just kind of like start and go and just see where it leads?
For the bigger projects, I usually have a pretty detailed script, and with Little Things, which is all these different short stories, I kind of did script for story by story. Mm-hmm. And then it just ended up being however many pages it was, just like once I had the stories finished, it's like, well, that's how long it is.
That's how big it
is. Funny Misshapen Body, there was like a plan like of wanting to tell this kind of overall story of becoming a cartoonist and fitting in parallel to that stories of kind of growing up from high school through college and kind of finding myself. So I wanted to tell that story. Like, I didn't want it to become unwieldy, but I didn't want to, you know, cut too, certain things out. So I had actually, at first I had the, like a panel by panel script breakdown of, wow. of the entire book. And that's the script I was working from when I got to those 100 pages. And I just felt too restricted by my own script and planning. And
this writer is an asshole.
It's like, it's like, what's he thinking? This is.
I'm going to email that bastard.
Yeah.
Oh, he never gets back to me.
Well, I have two email accounts, so I did
it. You
actually.
Do that. You can't even. Like, listen here, asshole.
That'd be a good motivational tool, actually.
Do you, whenever you get into it, yeah. do you kind of not change course, but you get into the project, and obviously you don't have to confer with a writer or the artist because mm-hmm. you're both. Or you know what, this part of the story needs a little bit more air. I'm gonna spread it out by a couple
more
pages.
Yeah, and I think that was part of being too restricted by that script, where it's, you know, it's planned out so meticulously that there's no room to change things, and I just felt like the entire story needed to be reorganized. It was a much I had it arranged much more chronologically at first, and now it's the stories themselves are kind of chronological, but they're a little more deliberately arranged in terms of going back and forth in time and kind of. I mean, I usually don't work so in such a linear fashion anyway, and. And then also just in terms of the drawing was really tight, and I just felt like everything was stiffening up, and so I kind of scrapped that script and rewrote the script and cut out a lot of things that felt kind of like they were there because they happened in high school or, you know, but didn't relate so closely to the overall feeling of the stories. And then so then I had a script that was more page by page than panel by panel, and then I kind of would write each page as I got to it, which is how I write like the big head stories usually, is just kind of I know what's going to happen on page, and then
this happens on this page, and then you know, then lay it out.
And I kind of like fill in as I draw each page.
Do you with your autobiographical work, do you kind of go at each project with an overall theme that you want to, you know, talk about, or is it more, you know, just sort of start with a moment in time and work around that? Or how is that? I mean, you know, what is your sort of process as far as going, okay, I'm going to do a book about my own life. How do you sort of choose parts?
It's usually just I have like an overall theme, and then it's just I kind of will sit down and write down all the stories that kind of relate to that theme or all the ideas okay. that I want to put in. And then it's just kind of continuously like refining that until I've cut out everything that repeats itself or that doesn't seem to fit as well. And then for some of the like anthologies where I'll do like a one or two page story, then it's usually a little different, where it's like, you know, like this particular moment or event right. that you know doesn't fit into any bigger context, whereas you know, like a book like Funny Misshapen Body, where it's kind of about finding yourself, and for me specifically, like finding myself as a cartoonist or right. an artist. And so it's just, you know, picking and choosing the stories that relate to that and trying to have them all add up to show that development.
Do you then go back and sort of go, okay, these are all the different scenes that'll be in it, you know, and then sort of try and figure out, you know, what's the most interesting way to tell those tales? Or because it's not generally chronological or linear in fashion. A lot of times, I mean, this one seems a bit more linear, but at the same time, you jump around in.
Yeah.
So are you just sort of looking at it? Okay, going, here are all the scenes, and how do I tell sort of the most interesting story? Or is
yeah.
there something else to that?
I'm not always really like focusing on like the interesting story or characters, but more of just like, what feeling do I want to get across here? Or it's much more like a vague kind of expressionistic way of doing things, where, like, with the story about there's a story in there about being diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and it's less about being sick than like being okay with being sick, or, you know, like getting past that and just, you know, kind of like dealing with it as it comes. And so
it's more about the emotions you want to.
Yeah. So it's about, it's not about the event itself, but how that event fits into the context of your life. And
okay,
like, what is it, what does that event mean to you?
Yeah. What comes from that? What do you get from that? Okay.
Your editors at Touchstone, have they come to you and said they want a specific theme or anything as far as what they're looking for from you? Or
no, they've actually were really kind of, they kind of let me run with it, you know, they were a little more hands on, I guess, than Top Shelf usually is. I mean, Chris will give me, Chris Darrows from Top Shelf will give me feedback. But I think I've been pretty fortunate in that, or maybe it's just unfortunate, depending on how much you like my books. I've been given pretty free range with the work I've done, both at Top Shelf and Touchstone.
Okay. I was when you're dealing with Touchstone, which, you know, is part of a huge book publisher that is prose, you know, prose, fiction and nonfiction. What was your experience dealing with a publisher that may not be as familiar with comics as, you know, as someone like Chris at Top Shelf, who really understands the medium and knows what is good and what may not, you know, something that he may want to pass on? What was it like working with a book publisher that maybe wasn't as familiar with comics as a medium?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference might be just in terms of how they market it, what they do with the book after it's finished. I mean, you have in the writing process, there was more like proofreading, and then they have like a legal department look at it, and things like that were less formal with Top Shelf. But it's, I think the big difference was afterward, when the book is finished and they can get it in stores. But, you know, like, it was kind of coming back to me and like, who do we need to promote this book with? Like, who do we talk to? Like, who can we send this book to read? And
you're like, well, I know some guys that record over at Dark Tower every couple of weeks, and Stacy has been fantastic. It was actually funny dealing with Stacy. Is your
she's the publicist that's working in. She's not my publicist, but
she's the publicist. She's the publicist that works that works on your stuff. Like, I think Lucy Nisley. She worked with Lucy on French Milk, but it was really funny emailing back and forth with Stacy that she was very formal and very, you know, it's like, well, you know, I'll contact Jeffrey and we'll see if we can set this up. I can email Jeffrey.
Like, you can give me a call. Yeah. And that's, I think that's another big difference, is that the comics community is pretty intimate and small. Not, I mean, even when it's not small, it is kind of small. It's, you know,
comparatively to,
yeah,
like, if you really needed to, you can get on the phone with just about anyone making comics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's lots of things where with Top Shelf, I would handle a lot of the press myself. Like, you know, someone would write to me about, you know, doing an interview or asking if they could, you know, run some sample artwork or something. And with Simon & Schuster, it's, you know, they have this department that handles permissions for, you know, artwork, and then this department handling, you know, so there's all these different layers of people to go through for things that I was used to just doing myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably the first time they've ever had to proofread a 300-page hand lettered book.
Yeah,
which is probably a little bit different for them.
Yeah, and there's But they were actually they were really good. There was a couple places where, you know, they were like, this kind of doesn't make sense. Like, can you clarify this? Or, you know, and then just different spelling errors, which, like with a book like Clumsy, where I kind of intentionally left all the mistakes on the page, is, you know, hence the title,
kind
like,
of fits.
Clumsy.
Sure, sure, sure.
It's like the idea being like, you make all these mistakes naturally, but now I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm being more careful with that kind of thing, unless it doesn't really interfere with like what the book is accomplishing, then I, you know, I might be more willing to let something go. But
yeah. And a typo for you is literally white out in a pen, yeah. Right?
Well, I just used Photoshop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, because I don't remember which book it was.
Yeah.
But the one book that you had done before it was published, you had shown us, and it was all done in a notebook.
Yeah, I mean, I still draw like that, and it used to be where I would just like redraw a panel and tape it into like the sketchbook, right. And now, you know, I'll still do that for some things, but like for like if it's just like one little thing that I can fix by, you know, like if I forget. Like, misshapen, actually, I initially spelled with one S, and it's two S's, and so, you know, to change that, like, in the book.
In a bubble of words.
Yeah, you know, I can just move things over a little and
right.
Copy the S. And
you know, I was just thinking about, we had talked a couple episodes back about the Kindle that I just bought a Kindle, and I was thinking, you know, it's like, Your books would be perfect for a Kindle. Have you considered that at all? Of maybe doing a Kindle version of it? And
I haven't, but that's, I don't know.
I think
I've actually thought, or even like the idea of reading it on a cell phone, because so much of my autobiographical stuff is like just these square panels, and it'd be really easy to
put in that form,
to have those stories in that format.
Yeah, it's like you know, an Alex Ross painted book is not going to do real well on a Kindle right now.
Right,
but,
right.
But your stuff
would translate beautifully
in size, and because it's line art is.
Kindle, get in touch.
are you thinking about anything like that? I mean, have you experimented with trying to?
No, I talked
to Dean Haspiel once.
Yeah,
and, you know, he talked about.
He seems like a guy who would be up for, I mean, me, I'm just, I kind of like do what I've been doing until I have to do it differently. Until someone absolutely like, okay, sorry, that technology no longer exists, Jeff. You're going to have to do things differently.
We were told by one of your former coworkers, Josh Elder, that you're getting involved with his project.
You're getting all techie.
Yeah.
That's not,
I just give it to him.
Oh.
And then they do their techie magic.
By the way, I advised him to take all your notebooks and eBay them.
No, because I'm just sending him scans. So.
Oh, so he made us feel like he had all the originals.
Originals? Yeah. No, Jeffrey wouldn't do it.
He's like, I'm giving that to Josh.
No one touches those.
Going back to Simon & Schuster, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about working with them was, what did you get?
Millions of dollars.
Millions. You're a rich man now.
It's all gone.
One weekend in Vegas.
It lasted 2 months. But it was a great 2 months.
What did you get the feeling from them as far as their thoughts on who to market the book to? Because you said like they would be asking you, who should we market this to? And I would kind of think that they would have the idea of going, okay, we're going to try and market this to a larger audience than
yeah. Just well, that, the, I mean, that was kind of my hope initially, was that, you know, they would try and have it placed in like the biography section in bookstores, and my idea being that the people who read my comics would look for it and be able to find it, and then people who don't normally read comics would stumble on it.
Right.
But it ended up being, you know, in the graphic novel section, just because they felt that the people that are going to want to read it will find it easier there.
And you see it in the comic book publishing industry and other publishing industries, and too many industries, it seems like people are so unwilling to take any sort of chance with anything. They just they keep marketing the product to the same audience that they know will already buy it.
Right.
And I understand that to some degree.
Which is why my Wolverine comic hasn't been published by Marvel.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make any sense. But it just seems... It seems like people just kind of covering their asses as opposed to anyone like being bold enough to try and do something.
Well, and that's one of the advantages to working with, you know, still doing, being able to do stuff with Top Shelf. I can do books with them that are a little more risky. Like, you know, what's the market for a black and white, like alternative comic book about mixed martial arts that's not straightforward fighting, but it's not straightforward like humor. You know, it's a weird kind of book that.
It's a small slice of the pie,
But, you know, with a smaller company like Top Shelf who you know, they have a smaller audience maybe, but they know how to get to that audience. And
they're specifically geared everything they do to that.
Yeah, audience. Yeah.
Well, by the same token, it's the smaller stores. And it's a shame that the privately owned bookstores are vanishing because that is where innovation happens. And a store knows its audience and knows, hey, this is a mystery. Let's put Queen and Country in the spy section where it belongs. Mm-hmm. Let's put Jeffrey's stuff in the biography section where it belongs.
Yeah,
and you know, now in the Barnes & Noble Borders world that we have, thankfully they have a graphic novel section on the one hand.
Much longer
I'm hip to that too. Yeah. But, you know, it's good that they have a graphic novel section because I think a lot of new readers are coming to the bookstores. No offense, Mark. Because this is a great comic store, and Mark really does have a good wide variety of indie and mainstream.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that you know, obviously that like a store, like especially like a store like Dark Tower with Mark has is, you know, talking with customers. It's like, and that's one of the things, like when I worked at Barnes & Noble, you know, like one of the things I liked doing was, you know, finding out what someone was interested in and then what knowledge do I have or what books do I know that I can like recommend or, you know,
it's that
one-on-one kind of interaction that really makes a difference. And I don't know that it's harder to get that with a bigger chain store where,
we actually have an email later in the show, which I think illustrates that perfectly. So
have you done any book expos yet?
I had. Like the Book Expo America?
Yeah. No. Okay, because that's what I'm wondering. As the marketplace gets smaller and we are only dealing with the book equivalent of big box stores, I mean, you know, like the Barnes & Nobles and places like that, who are the authors then speaking to? I mean, I know some of them are – I know a lot of them are inclusive to readers themselves. But, yeah, you almost wonder – you know, well, when we're only dealing with a couple stores, who are they trying to market to if it's only a couple people? And do we need the big tent to do that? You know what I'm saying?
Well, realistically, it's almost coming down to the same thing as comics where, I mean, most bookstores buy from two catalogs. You know what I mean? And much like there's just one distributor, there's two major distributors of books, and more often than not, they're ordering from that opposed to...
I mean, a lot of it just comes down to how much work it is and how much it costs, you know? It's tough to find that balance. And, you know, I love going to comic stores. Sometimes I like to go to the chain stores too. I mean, it's, you know, like to be able to browse a bigger selection
or a different selection.
And, you know, I would hope that there's room in the world for everyone, but, you know, I don't.
I was interested. I was reading.
I don't know.
In another medium, music.
My head hurts now.
You want to lie down for a while? You can lie down on my lap. That's all right.
You know, as we all know, the music industry is, you know, going in the crapper, and music stores, record stores, CD stores are just closing left and right. I mean, there's just been thousands of
CDs are plummeting.
But the ones that seem to be
surviving
are more of the smaller boutique kind of stores that
cater
to a specific crowd of people.
Yeah, and it's
Lori's Planet of Sound right down the street.
Yeah, and it's the stores that, you know, that they know their customers by name, and, you know, like they can deal with you on that one-on-one level, and they can provide that, like, you know, it's one of the big reasons to not go to a big chain isn't just like because it's a big chain. It's, you know, it's like the people that with so many people working there, the chances of getting to know someone working there from shopping
any
there
level
is like
of service,
you know, like you can get service, but, you know, it's just not going to be the same if you like going to the same comic store every, and you go there every week and you see the same couple people working there, and
well, they know what you like.
They don't just know what you like. They know you.
Yeah. The level of service here is different on a different level, because Mark can tell me to go to hell, and I can take that. I can take that how
and
he
because he knows you,
and he does because he's a friend. Right. Yeah.
No, and I totally agree, Jeffrey. I know that there were times when I was in like dead end non radio jobs and really just hating life and stuff, and literally would look forward to every Wednesday because I was like, all right, well, at least I know I'm going to see some people who know me and then like me and everything, and I can feel comfortable, and it's so I understand that.
Speaking of knowing people, do you find that doing so much autobiographical work that people have a level of familiarity with you that can be a little odd sometimes? That I mean, you put a lot of yourself in these books.
I don't think
weird.
I have any stalkers yet.
That you know about.
But we need to change that. We gotta get those fun.
That's why I have people.
Yeah. Well, that's the next contest on Around Comics. It's the B. Jeffrey Brown Stalker contest. for a first time copy
don't
of
joke
Funny
about,
Machine.
Don't
button.
Joke
yeah.
about that stuff.
Yeah, don't joke, man.
Will.
It's scary.
Yeah, he doesn't say that.
No, I mean, it's, you know, one of the things when I started out, the way I've always written the autobiographical comics is I've always kind of written them in the way that I would sit down and tell a friend, like, hey, this, listen to what happened to me today. It's that kind of level of familiarity that I kind of try to write the stories with. And, you know, it's usually reciprocated by the audience where, you know, if someone reads the book and they get it and then they can share their story with me. And I've always thought that art should be, you know, it's not just about putting something out there. It's a interaction between you and other people to kind of understand the world better. And so I mean it's a weird at times, like what people know, and if I think about it, or sometimes I'll tell someone something that was in a book, or you know, it's like I have to like,
yeah, I read that story already. Don't
like,
bore me.
Yeah, yeah.
I already
exactly.
know how you lost your virginity, Jeffrey.
I know, and that's something I try to tell everyone about right when I meet them. It's like, it's good icebreaker.
Absolutely.
And it's like, oh, check this out.
Whoa, too much information.
Okay, sit down for 2 hours. Let me tell you something.
Well, you do, and we've talked about Deadly House, we've talked about Incredible Change Bots and Big Hit. So
that's,
you know,
everything.
Well, everything. the stuff, you know, you do these, you know, very, very intimate self, you know, autobiographical books. But then you have these really kind of fun, wacky books that are great. Do you try and go back and forth? I've never noticed like the order in which you write stuff. But you know, was ChangeBots, was that in between two?
ChangeBots was kind of right in the middle of Little Things. Mm-hmm. So I kind of. I had written most of Little Things, and I think I had about like 150 pages out of 350 left to do, or something like that. And
but do you feel like you need to kind of take a break from yourself and do kind
yeah
of crazy
and
stuff like
and
that?
Just kind of switch up the way of writing things, and sometimes it's just good to take a break from a project too, and just, you know, get some distance. And going back to when I was writing Funny Misshapen Body and had that moment where I, you know, I've drawn 100 pages and it's like, what do I do? And I just basically took 2 months and just worried about it. But, you know, then was, what did I draw actually? I don't know if I drew anything for 2 months, but it's that kind of idea, like, of, you know, stepping back and trying to like have some distance from being right, like really involved with something, and come back to it with a different perspective, or you know, kind of feel a little fresh eyes with it.
Do you take notes at all, or is it all from memory? Because
I always try to do everything from memory. I think part of what I'm interested in writing autobiography is the idea that how we remember things is different from what really happened. So, so everything I'm writing about is what really happened, but only in as much as I remember it. And other people are obviously going to have different perspectives and remember different things. And sometimes my friends will tell me, you know, something else that goes with the story that I've written about that I had forgotten. And but I think I have the idea that if I'm remembering something, it's I'm remembering it for a reason, and it's important. It's somehow meaningful.
That truth is more important than whether or not it happened exactly.
What was the follow up to Clumsy? The kind of the other spin on
the Be a Man.
Yes, Be a Man. Yeah, and that's kind of how I imagine that the this is the other reality of how you remember this in a macho kind of. way, which is funny.
How I would tell a girl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is how it really happened. And that's a great way to get acquainted with your autobiographical stuff is to read Clumsy and then read Be a Man, because it's kind of the same story, but from kind of two different voices, which is a lot of
and
fun.
I think it's also part of and. The other thing about even the books like Big Head that are funny, I think they are very much informed by my personality and who I am. And sure. Even though those stories aren't autobiographical in the same way, that I think to get a sense of who I am, just reading the autobiographical books doesn't necessarily give you the whole picture. And then reading the books like Be a Man and the other things show that other side that doesn't always come through in a book like Clumsy or... Mm-hmm.
It's so hard for me personally to even keep up with a lot of the mainstream books, to keep up with my Green Lantern and Superman and that kind of stuff, much less really keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on in the alternative and independent comics scene. What stuff is out there right now? You were just at Staple. What kind of stuff is going on out there that's exciting you as a fan of alternative and small press stuff? Not to put you on the spot or anything.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, do you read overwhelming. A lot of indie stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I read pretty much. It's kind of the cop out answer I always give, but 90% of what Fantagraphics, Top Shelf, and Drawn and Quarterly mm-hmm. put out, I'll read.
Okay,
just thinking off the top of my head, this book Baloney, which is maybe less. It's not necessarily pure comics, but that was a book that came out from Drawn and Quarterly that I really enjoyed. It was something different. I don't know, maybe his other book was White Rapids. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
But that's okay. Well, that's why we're asking.
That's why you're asking me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we don't know that.
Much
of that stuff.
Because we were talking earlier about off mic, we were talking about Skyscrapers in the Midwest.
Skyscrapers of the Midwest, love it.
Which is one that I think flew under the radar of a lot of people, but then it became a Publisher's Weekly top graphic novel of 2008. A fellow Chicagoan, Josh Cotter, right?
Yeah, yeah. And or speaking of books maybe crossing that mainstream indie divide, is like Jeff Lemire, who did the Essex County trilogy, has a book called The Nobody.
Yeah.
Coming out from Vertigo. And Matt Kent, who has done Super Spy,
big
and
fan.
Pistol Whip, has a book.
What? Oh, no kidding. What's, new book?
Does anyone know the title? It's about a
no,
giant...
No, I love Matt's stuff, too.
I'm blanking on the title, but it's about a giant, a guy who has he just keeps growing.
A growth spurt?
Like a giant.
But I saw it, and I can't remember.
Yeah, oh, that's awesome. That's,
which actually, three guys, Jeffrey and Matt Kent and Jeff Lemire, will all be at the Windy City show this year.
So it's very much arranged for
that's
me.
That's right. Matt's a St. Louis
bring one. This up, yeah.
I forgot about that.
He's coming up with Chris Somney and...
Is Brian Hurt coming with him?
And Brian Hurt and Colin
nice.
Bunn.
Very nice.
Yep. So
excellent.
That St. Louis crew coming up. But yeah, I love Matt's work. If you're an espionage fan, Super Spy is absolutely fantastic.
And he also has another Super Spy
collection
like extra stories that weren't in the book coming, I think, next year. So.
It is beautiful book.
Speaking of, this is what I'm in the middle of reading right now.
Supernatural.
That's Matt's new book,
Matt. That's
2009. That's a later. It's before.
Oh, it's before that? I'll find it.
Keep Googling. the book I'm reading right now is actually not a comic at all, but it's published by Top Shelf. It's a book called Veeps.
Have not heard of it.
It's just profiles of every vice president.
Oh, I've seen that. And yeah, who drew Because
I'm gonna be honest and say I don't know the names of the writer and artist. But I love it.
The history of the vice
president. It's it's like a
sounds like something my dad would like.
I picked it up because it's I'm at the Top Shelf booth and I'm like, okay, like this is all the new Top Shelf stuff. I'll check it all out, and didn't start reading it till a couple weeks ago. Which I'm like 60 pages in, so you can tell my reading time is not great. But I love it. It's really funny and informative and not at all like what I would have expected, like going into it thinking like I'm going to read this book about vice presidents. It's can't recommend it enough.
Nice. I'll have to check that out. Actually, I've got to put it in an in-stock order and top
shelf. So it's prose, but there's some illustrations and there's portraits of each vice president. And I feel like I'm learning a lot, but each vice president's profile is only a few pages long, and it's amazing how much information, and it's just really funny.
I don't know if I need to know that much about Dan Quayle.
Yeah, but Alvin Barkley's certainly an interesting read, and some of these guys. And there was one vice president, and I can't remember which one, but he wrote the music to a song that became a huge hit in the 50s called "It's All in the Game," and it's like, well, the guy who wrote the melody was the vice president back in 1912, and he was McKinley's vice president. It's like, who the fuck knew that?
Yeah, well, they'll probably have some VPs that became presidents that will be.
That's the thing. Those, and certainly you remember the ones of your generation. But there are a bunch of people that were a heartbeat away.
Yeah, who was Taft's VP?
Right,
That kind of
Millard Fillmore's. Absolutely. Even some of Roosevelt's guys. And just some of the weird stuff that was going on with, the various people before Truman that were Roosevelt's vice presidents and stuff. So, yeah.
Cool stuff. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
But my courage is roaring like the sound of the sun. Because it's vain about its mane and will reveal them to no one. I'm an animal. You're an animal too.
The crowd howls for blood as two damaged warriors sacrifice flesh and bone in a perverse test of wills. From Funimation, it's Shigure Death Frenzy. Two legendary samurai share a long and violent past. Bitter rivals from the moment they locked eyes, these warriors inflicted wounds on each other that would have destroyed lesser men. As the final chapter of their saga unfolds, they must summon the strength for one last battle. A battle only one shall survive. Take home the Blu-ray and DVD on March 31st. That's Shigure Death Frenzy. The beauty is in the kill. Visit Funimation.com/Shigure. That's Shigurui for more details.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you for dropping by. I'm not pushing you off here, but we'll probably start wrapping some stuff up here. We do have some emails though, right?
Yeah.
If you're
looking for Matt Kent's
book. I still can't find it. I have no idea what Matt. Sorry, Matt.
Matt Kent, email us.
I apologize.
Everybody, email Matt. Ask him about it.
Yeah,
him.
I just think he's doing a horrible job marketing his new book, and I can't find anything.
I don't think
on.
It's actually done. So
okay.
Why.
There you go. If you would like to email the show, you can certainly do so by sending your email to info@aroundcomics.com. Please put listener feedback in that subject line. Helps us keep them all organized. You can also leave a message on our voicemail at 1-888-997-5903. Sal, emails.
Yes. We have a return email here. Tyler Banks emailed us last episode. I said, in regards to your previous episode 223, which is a few back, but I thought I would all comment on the Kindle as well. Another Kindle, part of the Kindle discussion. As a big reader myself, I have to think that the publishing companies have nothing to fear. For one, the price of the Kindle does make it prohibitive. The fact is that tech is becoming obsolete in under a year or so. If that happens with most video game platforms, if what happens with most video game platforms takes place with the Kindle, you're going to have a wasted dollar when another platform that is more efficient comes out in a year or so.
I kind of think the Kindle, even though we're on volume two of the Kindle now, it is still a first step technology.
I still see a lot of generation one iPods out there.
First off, it's not really first step because their e-readers have been around for a long time.
True.
It's
That's
just
true.
The first one that was more like
widely,
paper.
Yeah, I guess, and widely marketed. I saw a few on the plane coming back from San Francisco. That was,
I mean,
very
the thing
exciting.
With the Kindle is, unless you come out with a color one, there's, you know, if they come out with a Kindle 3, it's not going to really make my Kindle obsolete. I still can read.
Oh,
books.
I understand.
You know
that.
What I mean?
Oh,
so
sure.
It's, I mean, that's kind of thing.
No, I agree with that, and I still.
But
think...
technology moves so quickly. I don't know. You know, I don't know what the lasting life of a Kindle is, but
can you get new software for the Kindle? I mean, are there other innovations beyond it being a reader in terms of?
I would imagine you'd be able to update the firmware. I don't honestly know.
Okay. I mean, obviously, we're
You know, there's some built-in stuff in it that they're sort of beta testing on them. It's on there. You can use it. So,
okay.
I would imagine if they come up with updates, they would release them. That kind of stuff.
I just think eventually, you know, the iTouch and the iPhone and the Kindle are going to meet at some juncture. And truly,
Apple made some noise this past week. So
yeah. But it's exactly. I mean, that's the thing is that. Reading a book on a Kindle and reading it on an iPhone or on one of these, you know, even if it's a 10-inch iPhone, which is the rumor now, is a completely different experience.
Absolutely.
But he goes on to say, also, as a fan of paperback novels, I have to say that there is something that the Kindle does not give you, and that is the feeling and experience with a classic paperback.
He likes the smell of old book.
Bending the pages back and getting comfortable, and the fact that a classic book is a hell of a lot more durable than a Kindle makes me think that the publishers have nothing to fear. There are always going to be diehards. Yeah,
there'll always be paper books out there.
Although, I love the fact that I don't have to bend a novel back and try and hold it with one hand as I'm reading. You know,
well, I'm waiting for that Kindle that opens up like a book and has like two screens and almost does feel more like I'm reading pages kind of.
And it folds out like a Transformer.
Yes, yeah. Even better.
Or an Incredible Change Bot.
Well, yeah, that's where you're going. But yeah, exactly.
He goes on to say, I have my personal favorite authors, but when I go to the bookstore and I peruse the shelves, that is how I find some of my new favorites. In the end, the book has survived thousands of years. Whereas there has not been a single technological platform that has remained the same. Tech from 5 years ago is now considered obsolete, just some food for thought.
I think the TV has done okay.
TV's lasted, radio has been around.
Yeah.
But the ability to condense your library into a single venue is attractive.
Sure is.
I might look more into this, but again, I am still looking for some durance out of the venue.
Well,
the only thing I'd say in response to books is I always do like reading something old that is being published with a nice leather, you know, binding and cover. And even I just bought an old Donald Westlake book while I was in San Francisco. I went to City Lights, awesome bookstore, incredible bookstore.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like the Penguin James, or not Penguin, I forget who just re-released the Ian Fleming James Bond books, but they are really kind of just nice, beautifully formatted books.
Yeah, yeah, the trade dress on it is nice.
Yes.
But I think for a lot of people, I'm not going to get rid of my leather-bound edition of Moby Dick.
Sure.
It's going to stay on my bookshelves.
You don't have a leather-bound
edition. I do have a leather-bound edition of Moby Dick.
Of course you do.
Thank
he's
you
never
very
read
much.
It, but yes,
sure I have. Call me Ishmael.
Wow, that was so you read the first
7 years ago. Thanks, buddy.
But you know, but the Dennis.
I'm going to check
Lahaney novel.
Sure,
I don't need to keep that math paperback.
I have all sorts of old books that I have.
I have boxes of old books that
I hardcover editions and stuff that I'm not going to get.
I think that would be the thing for me, is that the idea of like the Kindle is like seems like it would be really great for. Cheap, easy way to read books that like I wouldn't want to own, that like I'd like to just
read
them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't need to, you know, I don't need to have shelf space and like those books I can buy the print editions. I don't know.
Or at the same time for me it's like there's a lot of older books that you can get really cheap or for free that I already own, you know, a paperback or a hardcover of, but I may not necessarily sit down and read the whole book again, but there may be passages from it, there may be parts of it, or just as a reference piece of going, you know, it's like I have the Three Musketeers on my Kindle. I may never sit down and read it on there, you know, but it's my favorite book.
Yeah, but you can pick it up and read a chapter if you want.
Yeah, if I want to, you know, I mean, and so, yeah, I mean, I have books that I'll never get rid of that, you know, hardcovers and stuff like that, but yeah, for like, you know, the next, you know,
Yeah. Well, whatever, you know, and to bring it back.
That book, well, I don't need a copy of it.
Yeah, and to bring it back to comics, it's like there will be a day where, you know, I believe that there'll be a portable comic book reader, and that'll be your monthly comics. But I'll still buy, you know, if they come out with an absolute edition of anything that Alan Moore's done, I'm going to buy that,
Just look at the Black Dossier with, like, the funny little inserts, you know, like that stuff that just can't be replicated in
Mm-hmm. Did they put the Flexo disc in the 45 in
the we were looking at the paperback and it had, you know,
3D glasses.
It had the 3D glasses and the little
the disc didn't get the record. They were supposed to put the record in the absolute and they didn't
make the absolute.
Damn you, Alan Moore. Yes,
that's not really absolute then, is it?
No, I would say no.
No, and it was $100. So I got issues with that.
No, it wasn't. It was $75.
$100.
When's speaking of Top Shelf? When's the next
April? No.
April sounds right.
April for the first one.
April.
Yes.
Really? Was it in previews?
I believe that the first
issue. Yeah, the first 96
page. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen 1910?
1906.
Something like that.
No, 1910?
I guess it's 1910.
Something like that. I just know that it's going to be the 396 page.
Right.
Yeah. I'll wait for the collection.
Oh, I'll buy the
collection. Although that's what, like, that's, like, I have all of the, it was $100. I didn't pay $100. I have, like, that's, like a series, I have all the issues, like the original
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen
issues and everything, and I have the absolutes.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That's funny. We were just talking about
that. So now I'm sitting there going, well, should I buy those? I don't know why I would, but
I think I'm
going to
wait
that...
for, like, the, you know, the second All-Star Superman hardcover came out. And
I bought that.
I'm going to wait for the absolute.
They're doing an absolute. Yeah.
It's good.
I bought both the hardcovers. I'll probably buy the absolute and then try and eBay my hardcovers for
them. You know, and that really does... You know, grill my cheese, if you will, frost my ass. When they do that, when they split a story into two hardcover volumes, it's like, fuck you, man. I'm buying a goddamn hardcover. Give me the whole goddamn story.
Marvel needs to be much more judicious as to what they decide to put out in hardcovers. Well, and I think they've gone a little hardcover crazy of late.
Well, but I also hear the argument that that's for libraries. And that libraries prefer
hardcovers.
The hardcover things.
I don't know. The Omega of the Unknown hardcover. The Jonathan Lethem.
Nothing wrong with that.
Oh, yeah. No, that's good. Yeah. No, I think,
you don't have to buy
about that kind of random.
No, I'm not buying
the random, like, Fantastic Four arc that maybe not isn't as good, you know.
Like, what I sometimes with Marvel, it's like the hardcover is almost, you know, it's like the same cover design. You know, it's like the only difference is like that
it's
this
a hardcover.
One's hard. And this, you know, it's like what's the point of even having that difference? You know, like the book as an object is virtually identical. You know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the library binding makes sense because the libraries want durability, and then they just issue it comic shops, and anybody that'll buy it can have it. But,
sure.
I don't know. Next email. Hi guys. First of all, love the show. Have been listening for some time now. Great stuff. Anyways, I have got into the world of comics over the last 2 to 3 years and have over the last year managed to get into Marvel continuity with Civil War. However, when asking at my local comic shop where I should find a similar jumping in point for DC, I got nothing but bemused faces. Having heard you guys discuss if it is hard for a new reader, Jesus, I can't read, to get into DC.
Or this email.
I would have to say yes, it really is. I have read some standalone DC stuff, also All-Star Superman, Kevin Smith's recent Batman miniseries, and the Brainiac arc of Action. However, everything else seems to require me to know a hell of a lot of backstory about characters I haven't heard of. Sorry, Tom. Well, he's not here, so screw him. Is there any sort of place I can jump on? I hear they might be resetting the universe after the most recent crisis. Thanks again for all the great podcasts, guys. Chris Slight.
First of all, I emailed Chris back because I wanted to get clarification on this. And if that really was the reaction of the comic shop, the people that worked at the comic shop, whenever he asked them that, and he said it was, and I won't name what comic shop it was.
You just want to know what comic shop it was.
If I said what comic shop it was, you would know. It would ring a bell with a lot of people.
Okay.
But if you are going to a comic shop and you ask them a really complex question like, what kind of books from the second largest comic book publisher in the world should I be reading? And they can't give you an answer. Might be time to look for a different comic shop.
Wow.
That's about as basic a freaking question as you can ask someone.
Well, what's your answer?
First of all, I would come back at them with a question of what kind of comics do you like or what kind of movies
that's,
do you like?
That has nothing to do with the question.
The question is, where do I jump in
on DC Comics? What's your answer, Mr. Bright Guy?
If you like sci-fi? Green Lantern.
No, I want to know the continuity of DC Comics.
The DC universe in general. Where do you start?
Where do I start?
I have an answer to the question. But
Identity Crisis.
Squirm for a while.
Identity Crisis.
That's a ways back.
Yeah, I would honestly say right now to go to the monthlies because that's exactly what's going on right now is a soft reboot, and you're getting in the back of all these issues that have come out in the last 2 months. Those 8-page kind of primers of this is why this character is important. Here's a little bit of his backstory. And here's a tease of the direction that we're going in. You're seeing it in all the Superman books. You're seeing it. Batman right now with the battle for the cowl is certainly a nice place to jump on. And, you know, I would say that for – but again, in all the individual monthlies, it's not just Superman continuity and Batman continuity. They're doing it up and down the line. And, again, under the umbrella of what's coming in Blackest Night. So that's why I do think that, like, really this is a good time to kind of jump into the monthlies of DC.
It's as good as any time.
Because I think there has been, since Infinite Crisis, a huge mishmash of continuity.
I think continuity is, like, one of the biggest problems with mainstream comics ever. And
they are slaves.
You know, it's just, like, that was one of the interesting things for me, like, you know, being back into Marvel back in the, you know, early – up through the early 90s and then coming back and starting to read stuff, you know, in the last 5-6 years or whatever, and realizing like everything just became more and more convoluted and and you know, where it used to be that characters might show up in each other's books, like kind of cross paths,
kind of like they do an Image now.
Now it's like their entire lives are intertwined, like, so completely, and it's just
it's all one big story.
Yeah, to a fault.
Well,
yeah.
and that's what killed my interest in comics as well in the 90s was, it, you know, the never-ending event and the never-ending, like, big story. And the one saving grace I would say is that it seems to me, certainly more on the Marvel side recently, they have figured out how to have their cake and eat it too when it comes to events, because each individual book, you see a direct reason why that book exists tying into the big bad, and the big bad being Norman Osborn right now in Dark Reign. Everyone is coming in, every individual book and hero and team has a different reason why this affects them, and it doesn't matter what's happening in the other books. And I think Daniel Way's Deadpool was an excellent example of that, where Deadpool was very much his own, the hero. I keep saying this, and I'm sure people are sick of me saying it. He was the hero of Secret Invasion in his book. And it was totally this great Deadpool story, and the way that it ended was brilliant. And I really think, again, if you really want to read a cool individual book, it doesn't matter. You have the general idea of the Skrull invasion, but you're getting a wonderful Daredevil or a Deadpool adventure.
Black Panther. What was the same way?
Thing. Same thing.
But back
Agents
on the
of Atlas right now in Dark Reign and everything.
Sure.
Thunderbolts
is great.
Yep.
But back on the DC side, right now, Green Lantern is great. Jump in with Green Lantern Rebirth. Superman, the Superman family of books are better than they've ever been I've been reading them.
And I think right now is a good time because they're about to reboot the origin. Mm-hmm. And also the whole new Krypton story is still very interesting. Yep. And because now it's going to be the fun part of him on new Krypton.
And you know what? It's easy to follow because they're all numbered. So you can go back. And,
that's
and
true.
So,
yeah, he mentioned, you know, Civil War is what got him back in. And understood sort of Marvel's continuity, or at least it gave
the company wide, the company wide continuity.
Unfortunately, at DC, there really isn't. I mean, Final Crisis. I mean, Christ,
there's
no
DC
one
stuff.
Book that I think you could say here, jump on this, and you're going to kind of get a handle on what's going on in the DC universe.
Is that a problem?
I'm not saying it's a problem. I'm saying it's a problem for this question.
Yeah, I mean
I mean, he's asking the question, so I'm answering that question. Is it wrong as a publisher for DC Comics to do that? I don't know. I do think that DC, while I like a lot of the comics they're writing, I think a lot of it is not very
accessible,
new reader friendly. I mean, it is very much steeped in continuity. It's steeped in history. It's it, you know, you're constantly referring back to, and while I personally enjoy it, it is not very easy necessarily for a reader to jump into the DC world. I mean, comic fans, you know, as a group sort of aren't necessarily happy of going, well, I'm just going to read this one title and not understand how any of it ties into the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read DC Comics, and maybe I'll only read Superman and Batman and Green Lantern, but I want to know how DC as a universe is working. And there's not really at this, you know, right now, there's not a book out there that exists for you to sort of get a handle on where the DC universe is.
And normally that book would be something like JLA.
JLA, JSA. And I was going to say, those are probably the closest to it. But I think like Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, for those books, you know, they are pretty self-contained. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't really involve anything else. So you could certainly jump in and get an idea of anything, you know, space related kind of in DC, because that's really all that's going on.
Well, much like, unfortunately, Infinite Crisis, the outcome of Final Crisis is the universe is trying to, you know, establish a new direction right now. And that's
what that
why
is, who knows?
Well, it's just kind of hatching now, and that's why there is no clear single book. And I mean, I would say that, like you were saying about Justice League and Justice Society, once this Black Adam story finishes up and Geoff Johns finishes his run, there is a new jumping on point when Willingham and Sturgis come on Justice Society.
I mean,
JLA's
I would just
go through the same problem.
I would just read titles you like and don't worry. Yeah. I mean, you'll get the hang of it. You'll figure it out. They're not. It's not
Jeff
James
said,
Joyce. You'll figure it out. You know?
but that's what Jeffrey said, and I agree with him. Yeah, it is a shame the continuity is the pain in the ass. It is, because All Star Superman is great.
I think for me as a reader, you know, I don't care how the universe works. Like, I don't care how it, like, I don't.
You don't need to know every detail of the universe to enjoy a specific book.
Yeah, and I guess for me, like reading some of the DC stuff, and I don't read as much DC for sure, but, you know, when something like that comes up, it's just like, I just kind of like, you know, it's like, okay, there's obviously a backstory here, there's obviously,
you don't need it to necessarily, it's like, but that the mentality, for whatever reason, especially for older comic books, I have to know every detail. I have to know, you know, the last 25 years of what's been going on in order to read what's happening now. And you don't really, you may,
if it's well written,
if you want to know that stuff, go on Wikipedia.
Well, and also if
that's what,
Chris's point is I think that's what bothers me is when it's fine to have that continuity, but when you're reading a book that depends on that continuity and that you can't, you know, that becomes confusing without it. That's when it's a problem.
Well, we all kiss his ass, and there's a reason why Geoff Johns is as great as he is at DC, because he succinctly will say, oh, there's Bizarro. And in two sentences, we'll give you the backstory of all you need about Bizarro, and you're up to speed.
Yeah, Johns
does
a great job.
And he does it with every little nuanced bit of DC Universe facts that fit into his story. And I think that's what makes him a great writer. Yeah. It's like, okay, there's Sinestro. Well, why should I care about Sinestro? Well, here's a quick page to explain it. And I think he is a master at it. I wish there were more writers that could do that.
I think
they're learning.
I think four of the guys that are very good at that are all working in the Superman family books, and that's Geoff Johns,
James
Sterling
Robinson,
Gates,
Rucka.
James Rucka. Yeah, and Rucka. Yeah. So you got those four guys that are very good at that, and I think that's why the Superman books are this last issue of Action and the new Krypton, World of New Krypton was great. And they're really just like, yep, this is the history of Krypton. This is why this is interesting. Go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say, read the new Krypton stuff that came out, Action and Superman, because that'll give you an absolutely great idea of what's going on with Superman and where it's going forward, for at least for the foreseeable future.
And by the way, I didn't mind Battle for the Cowl.
I thought it was good.
If you're interested in Batman, read Battle of the Cowl. Ignore everything that's gone on for the last year before that.
Sure.
You don't need to know going into that is that Batman is gone.
Yeah.
And these are the new players that are trying to fill the void.
Which,
and,
you know, for people that are looking for Batman books, that's brilliant.
Tony Daniel drew his ass off on that book. I thought the art on it was fantastic.
And, you know,
I loved it.
Have to say that when it comes to mainstream books, I never really thought of this before, but as I read them and stuff, the art really does carry a mainstream book in a lot of cases. And a lot of times, decent writing can be forgiven, or just so-so writing can be forgiven in a well-drawn book. And I think that the challenge is when a book is not well drawn, then the writer is really kind of out there, and it better be a cool story. Or else
see, I'm the other way around. Like, I can read a good story with bad art, as opposed to a bad story with cool art. I don't care if it, I mean, it's like I can look through it, but I don't. I'm not going to read the story if it's bad.
Interesting.
Even if if the art is great, but I can read a good story with subpar art, as opposed to the other way around.
And I think the opinions on art, sometimes you need to clarify that. It's not a matter of how well it was drafted, you know, what quality of draftsmanship.
It's storytelling.
It's storytelling. It's how well they tell a story with that.
Well, there's just some piss-poor artists out there, too.
And that's
the thing, though. Right. Sure. That's part of what makes the art great, is good storytelling, yeah.
But what was the book? I'll never forget it. It was the book that you had as the top of the stack. God, it had to be 2.5 years ago. It was basically a stick figure book. It was a Pirate Bob.
What was the name of that?
But that was an example of literally a book of stick figures, but the storytelling in it was
fantastic.
You don't have to be, you know, the greatest draftsman.
Well, you know, are you a Larry Marder fan? Tales of the Bean World?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I heard that come up.
I was going to say, you and Vince need to.
Up on 11 O'Clock Comics, and it made me laugh.
He's got the big collection coming out.
Yeah, exactly. I've been challenged to read it.
Yeah, poor Chris was schooled by Vince on 11 O'Clock Comics.
Maniac that thinks Bean World is the second greatest comic ever.
No, but it's, you know, yeah, and it's... it's
no, Vince, I think it was Watchmen, Dark Knight, and Bean World.
Yeah, I understand. Oh, okay. Well,
you lunatic. Yeah.
We'll talk off the air. I understand. I kind of understood what he was saying, but yeah, he kind of
love you, Vince. But that's Vince.
Maybe shake my fist at the iPod once again.
Hey, that's the 11 o'clock.
That's what they do best.
We're well intentioned.
All right, I got another email.
Yeah. Okay. Last email, and we'll wrap things up here
before my laptop dies. G'day there, men of iFanboy Around Comics and 11 o'clock Comics. This is a multi podcast email.
We have been carbon copied on this email.
I write to you, an avid listener of all three. I won't say who my favorite is, and I have an idea for you that I hope you will consider. This idea has been kicking around me head in various incarnations.
It's from a leprechaun, isn't it?
It's in me head. For a while now, but with the release of Watchmen and continued promises of I'll have a better idea after I watch it a second time, I was wondering, would you consider getting together, either over Skype or whatever, and discussing it? Chris was ho-hum about it. The iFan trio were happier, and Vince loved it. From a wider perspective, I often wish that you would all do once a month or whatever. Because you often all have varying opinions on the state of comics or which comic was awesome or bad, and I would love, in hindsight, to hear those on opposing ends of the scale go at it. Okay, that's it for me. I love the shows, and hope you all do too. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Joshua S. Hill. P.S. But as for me and my family, we... I'm sorry. Okay.
It sounds like Joshua wants a comics podcast crossover. So, but the thing is, then you would have to keep up with continuity throughout all of the podcasts.
It sounds like
there would have to be a podcast crisis at some point.
It would probably be. It probably sounds a lot better in theory than it would work physically, just because you'd have like 8 or 9 guys sitting around all trying to talk at once.
Well, it's kind of like our podcast panels when there are too many shows represented, and it's just like,
I would love to pick a topic at some point and have Connor from iFanboy and you Wood.
Well, that's what I think would be more interesting.
Jesus.
And to be honest, and you guys are due, because with the podcast companion book coming out in May, I've always kind of held off on having other podcasts on Wordbloom, just because it's always been a creator show.
Sure.
And we don't
want to be on your stinking show.
That's it. No, you guys will be on. But no, I had a nice talk with the iFanboy guys, and that's what I was saying. I don't think more than. Like, I don't know how the hell the geeks do it, quite frankly, with 5 people. But no, honestly, I think you're right. I think it is too many cooks. You know, the 24-hour cast worked well.
Yeah, well, you had a lot of people come in and out, and there was generally only 3 or 4 people talking at a time. Mm-hmm.
True.
Or conscious at a time. So
or playing trivia.
No, I think it would be kind of cool. I mean,
You know,
because
yeah,
I think an all-star thing would be fun, or it would be like Connor, you know, and you and like Vince.
Maybe,
and, you know,
maybe we can try and do something for that around the Windy City Con, because I think some of the CGS guys are coming in. I think Peter is coming in.
Oh, great.
And I believe that Ron is going to make it
in
this
year.
Excellent.
He was in last year,
yeah,
so that's
so
nice.
Maybe I think we'll do Woods coming in. So yeah,
but we'll have to fight first, and then realize that we're all on the same side, and then make up and go fight crime.
Well, because I remember in 06 or 07, Peter and I were like sat down, Peter Rios and I, and it's like, all right, so come on, what do you like? And I'm like, it's like when we were asking you about indies, Jeff. It's like, I don't know, man. You know, I mean, it's the thing. It's like, I don't know. So I mean, I guess we would need like a good subject to kind of get us fired up.
Yeah.
I could yell at anybody about any subject, doesn't matter.
I'm so proud of you. I'm so like thrilled to be ready to argue at a drop of a hat with you.
Be careful what you wish for, John.
I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Be careful.
I'll big time your ass again like I did apparently. I'm dying. Last week, Eric brought in the Around Comics section of the podcast book, and I was just thumbing through it. I'm like, oh, they're talking about me. And it's like, yeah, when we first tried to contact John, he kind of big timed us through an email. And I'm like, I did? And I felt so bad. I'm like, the fuck
you
am
totally
I that
did.
I'm big time?
You
somebody.
Totally did.
I'm sorry, man.
Right, Chris? He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
He
hugged Sal as an apology. Obviously, he hasn't accepted it.
I did. What are you talking about?
No, he's like, no, once we got to know you.
Too late. I've probably done the same thing to other people for absolutely no reason.
We like our podcasing friends.
Absolutely.
And our comic book creator friends. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You listen to any podcast, Jeffrey?
Not regularly.
Yeah. I mean, not even comic
me
book.
Either.
Or
either.
I mean,
no, you're not hurting anybody.
No, just podcasts in general. Okay.
No, that's
what do you listen to when you draw, or do you listen to anything?
I usually have something going on video that I've seen before,
and listen to the.
And,
sure,
Scotty does that,
and then
he listens to
more
music.
Yeah. Like Lord of the Rings is one that. Like is a good one.
Sure.
You know, just something that I can kind of tune out. Like anything that I would actually like be listening to. Like I don't even listen to like NPR anymore when I'm drawing.
Because it'll
know,
take
stuff
you away
that
from
I
the...
used to listen to. Like just like, because then I get distracted and then all of a sudden I find I'm sitting there. Yeah. And the other thing that's been hard is like now I don't ride the train anywhere. So like listening to podcasts is like once in a while.
It's a commuter.
Sure.
I don't listen to very
actually
many
most
either.
Recently I like downloaded all this like learning Spanish podcast. Like, I'm gonna,
oh, that's cool.
I'm gonna refresh my Spanish.
Hey, there's a reason why they're like near the top of the Libsyn, thing. All the language podcasts
French,
do
Spanish.
Incredibly well.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Japanese, French, absolutely.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah,
hilarious.
So.
I don't have much time to listen to podcasts. I just because I only have like a 20-minute drive to work.
Yeah.
20 minutes home.
Yeah, I was some two or three. I try and keep
me
up
too.
with John's interviews and you know, trying to listen to the iFanboy guys and yeah, it's hard to keep up with a lot of them. So
yeah, yeah. I've been trying more at work a little bit here and there, but
and occasionally I want to you know put something else inside my head besides comic books and comic book stuff.
Well,
I want to you know I'm
we
looking
were discussing
for
on Twitter
oh.
all the other non comic book podcasts that we all enjoy.
Yeah, I love
I like
Radio
the Adam,
Lab,
the Adam Carolla show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, isn't that
funny.
Cool?
Yeah,
good for him, man.
No, I'm pretty convinced that Carolla was pretty much the whole reason I liked the Man Show to begin with.
There you go. Oh, that's interesting.
Jimmy Kimmel's all that.
Yeah,
I tell all my poor radio brethren that are finding their contracts not being renewed. It's like you've got a brand name. If you know, even if it's temporary, get on there and do a podcast.
Hell yeah! Oh, Carolla's going to change things. He had two million
downloads.
I think
he's up to
three.
Well, that's like Gervais was like that before him, and you're
But
you know.
I think Adam Carolla is going to learn from that and not charge people for it. So
we'll see.
That'll be interesting. All right, let's wrap. We could talk about this for hours. Let's wrap things up. We're proud to help support the Hero Initiative as always. Go help out veteran creators in need. You can do that by visiting www.heroinitiative.org. Call 310-909-7809. We also have the PayPal link on the Around Comics homepage. Thank you, everyone, for the iTunes reviews as of late. We've had a nice rush of them. So F. Monroe, GT Cypher, and Ghetto Penguin.
Ghetto Penguin.
Ghetto Penguin.
That's Opus's cousin.
We appreciate the push to 300.
They're doing the Bloom County collected.
Are they really?
Bloom County?
Oh, I love Bloom.
I think
County.
IDW yeah, I think so.
Is doing
IDW
like
is
Bloom,
doing it.
Bloom
oh, that's
County.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good for them, man.
IDW is coming out with some nice collections.
Oh, those
man.
Those books are fantastic.
They do a great job.
I have the
Peanuts?
No.
Dick Tracy? Little Orphan Annie?
I don't even know if it was. I don't think it's IDW.
Terry and the Pirates.
Exactly. Let's keep
Jesus
trying.
Jesus Christ! No.
Noel Sickles. Calvin
and Hobbes.
I have the Noel Sickles. Calvin
and Hobbes.
Hobbes awesome.
Library thing.
Oh,
it's
very nice.
Awesome.
Oh,
it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
That's great. No, I don't have any of the rest of those.
Okay. You can drop by the forum at aroundcomics.com if you want to continue this conversation.
You can
follow all of us except for Jeffrey on Twitter. You're not on Twitter, are you?
No.
Good for you.
I did just start a new blog kind of thing.
So. What is the blog address? Yeah.
It's jeffreybrowncomics.blogspot.com.
Very nice.
There you go.
I'm just posting whatever projects I've been working on lately or like.
Someone actually posted that on our forum and the 11 o'clock forum. So
cool.
So you have.
That was me.
Under a secret name. You are David D. from New York.
That's why I don't have time to listen to podcasts. I'm posting about myself
on every comic book forum in the world. Sir, are going to be at the Windy City Comic Con.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah,
we appreciate it.
It's a big trip.
Yeah, get
on the train. It's like 15 minutes.
Yeah, do you even have to take the train? You can probably take a bus. It's probably easier. A Montrose bus or something.
No, the Brown Line, I just take it down and...
Get off on Addison.
Get off... Yeah, it's, you know...
Right by the
no, Belmont.
Confines.
Sorry, Belmont.
Hey. Boy.
Yeah, get off at Belmont. It's, you know, it's a short walk. I could transfer to the Red Line and then...
Come on up
take
to,
that
to,
one
to
step,
Addison.
But, you know, it's like...
I know, waiting for the Red Line can...
Yeah, it's like
train talk.
So so anyway, Saturday, September 19th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yeah,
go to www.windycitycomiccon.com. Please order your advance tickets if you can. They are
just
only
to make Chris happy.
Only $10,
and it will
assure you
80
of,
creators.
Yeah,
I was gonna
80.
Say, did you see that roster for Christ's sake?
80,
there's some talent
30,
in there. Huh?
30 new guests this year, and we're gonna have some more creator announcements. I think the next time we record, so I gotta go twist some arms.
All right,
crack some heads.
It's only like 219 days.
I was.
Were you? Were you getting on people?
I was
getting
trying.
On. Good.
I was trying.
Good.
You know, we'd love to have you come. You know? If at all possible, we'd love for you to come.
He's got Fraction in the trunk of his car now. No more Iron Man for a few months, folks.
Sorry, kids.
All right. Check out Tom. Tom, who wasn't here for this episode.
Tom had to go meet his lady.
Mm-hmm.
His lady.
His fiancée.
He's probably... Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get
it. Yeah, I don't want to know. I don't want to know where Tom is
Tom
right now.
Tom would say it.
But you can listen to Tom three times a week on Tom versus the Flash.
You enjoyed that this week?
Yeah.
Cracking me up.
Oh, it's a great podcast. The aforementioned 11 o'clock comics. You can hear me and Vince B and David Price and Wood.
Come shake your fist at the podcast, as we all do when we listen. Unbelievable.
It's a good time. It is an alcohol fueled.
I'm a couple
2 hours.
I'm
of
a couple
fun.
Episodes behind.
Are you?
On that
I'm,
one,
I think yeah. I'm only one episode behind. I'm gonna have to.
I think I'm two.
I want to hear the Watchmen reviews. I haven't heard the Watchmen reviews.
Yeah, it's probably a lot of what you heard. It's
Jet.
Yes, but I haven't heard Vince's take. And I
Vince liked
are we going to do?
I
our
want to hear. Honestly, I enjoy hearing what Vince and David and Wu would think.
Are we going to do our annotated Watchmen? Otherwise, I'm just going to do it myself.
Anybody out there want us to do a Watchmen, a series on Watchmen comics or? I don't know how many episodes it would take us to break it down.
Probably
24.
Oh, you mean the film or the
no,
or
the
comic.
Comic.
The comics. The comic. Yeah. I would love to. It's
I'm working on my annotations. I may just write the book.
All right.
Yeah.
The
I mean, I just watched, well, you know, another podcast is just
No, I know everybody's
no, yeah,
been
yeah,
doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, CGS did it, but
well, I think that the nice thing about I mean
it was interesting.
The nice thing about Watchmen is that you can I mean I think you can view it in a lot of different ways. I mean, there's not like
I enjoy.
There's not one.
The
there's not one answer. Like,
oh,
you know what I mean? It's like there's. It's so complex and dense that you know.
Oh,
two people can read it and have different experiences from it and
no
pull
question.
Different things. Mm-hmm. So, I don't. I mean, like, I want to talk more about like the actual story a bit more than I've heard other podcasts talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, I'd like to release them all at once.
12 episodes at once. Just put it all out there.
Yeah, just 12 at once.
That's a lot.
Yeah, no. I'd like to you know take our time recording them and then just put them out there and let people get through them as they wish.
Well, so. Let us know if you'd have any interest in hearing that. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll do it.
Be fun.
Otherwise, I'm just gonna do my own.
All right,
by myself.
Mr. Centris, anything coming up on Word Balloon?
Shit, no. Nothing.
Not a damn thing.
Not a goddamn thing. No. J.M. DeMatteis should be posted by the time of this.
Is it DeMatteis or DeMatteis?
I'll find out on Saturday. I'll find out tomorrow when I'm talking to him. Mark, I'm sorry. I always get your name wrong. But
when are you talking to Bendis again? Could you ask him, you know, did Dr. Manhattan kick him in the nuts?
Yeah, I'll find out what his Watchmen hate is all about. But I'll let that gestate before I
good
ask him.
God.
He going to rag on the fucking Green Lantern movie, too?
I'm sure, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not really sure. Who else did I just hang out with in WonderCon that it's definitely... Oh, you know, Gary Gianni, who I'm really looking forward to speaking to, mm-hmm. Chicago guy, has been doing the Prince Valiant comic strip unbeknownst to us because it isn't carried here in Chicago, but I think is an interesting guy to talk to, much like I did with Alex Saviak in mm-hmm. New York about where the comic strip is going with all the new newspapers biting the dust.
Sure.
And he's just such a beautifully classic illustrator. I'm a huge fan. And it was great seeing him and Mark mm-hmm. Schultz and some of the fine Fless Publications artists over there. Just nice. Really beautiful stuff. Yeah. So.
Gary Gianni, Academy of Art alum.
Yeah, indeed.
Yep. Out of that great group of guys, Alex Ross and Jeff Darrow and the Gianni brothers. I mean,
absolutely.
That was fantastic talent.
Doug Faba, Jill Thompson.
Yep, absolutely.
Before we finish.
Go ahead. Funny Misshapen Body, now available from Touchstone Books, an imprint of Simon and Schuster. Retails for $16 US. Anything else that we're missing on that?
What other books are you missing?
Buy it. Go get it.
Buy it or read it.
Mm-hmm. Or both.
Read it in the store and then just send you cash.
Or read it, buy something else.
I would recommend go to a bookstore, read it, and then just send money directly to Jeff.
There you go.
I think that works better. than
that works.
He's nodding, but he's like, I can't condone that.
Like, at first it sounded, I was like, yeah. And I was like, that just seems something wrong. I don't know. People just sending money.
Anything on the horizon after Misshapen Body?
You know, more issues of Sulk that I'm working on. Top Shelf is actually working on. There's a short documentary called Drawing Between the Lines, kind of about me and alternative comics. And Top Shelf is going to try and put out a DVD of that later this year.
Outstanding, cool. Man.
Hopefully for Comic-Con.
Beautiful.
Cool. If not, we can premiere it at Windy City.
Yeah.
Certainly the Chicago premiere should happen at Windy City.
Sure.
So you got a theater.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Just
directing any more Death Cab for Cutie videos?
If you go on the blog, though, you can see a little short trailer.
I saw that
for
a little
that was very cool.
Very cool. It was like your own motion comic.
Yeah. Except even better.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really cool.
No, it was actually
animated.
Yeah,
beyond a motion comic.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so, you know, worked on that. And yeah, what am I working on?
That's it, Jeffrey.
Right now, I'm working on a story for the Pop Gun Anthology for Volume 4.
Oh, cool.
So be a while before
it's a great anthology.
Sees that. But, yeah.
Same business. And playing with the boy at home, right?
Yeah.
There you
going
go.
Going to the park.
Mm-hmm. Letting him age in the sun.
You know, drawing. He draws whales and sharks right now. So.
Oh, cool. Nice.
How old is he?
Just over two.
Just over two.
So.
My kid can't draw shit. whales and sharks.
It's because you encourage him so much.
Well,
you're so positive.
I don't. Jack, he doesn't listen to the show.
No. Hey, also can potty in the potty.
No, he's learning, but yeah, not doing that. Good.
Yeah, it takes time.
You had one more thing.
Yeah, well, because we didn't really get to talk about any comics. There was something I just was gonna mention
mm-hmm.
a book. That from last week that I really loved and was Rebels 2.
Yes.
Oh. If you're not reading that book, man, that thing is awesome. That is an awesome book.
And again, the first and second issues are out, so another good jumping on point for the cosmic side of the DC universe.
I just absolutely love watching Brainiac be a dick to everyone that he runs across.
Nice.
He's just my kind of guy. Just an asshole.
I got to read it. It's
awesome. It's awesome.
Oh, so. Like 18 books this week.
I know it was a crazy week, man. I heard you say the same thing, and I'm like, I spent way too much money this week, but I have to say it's all good.
It has, but I haven't been disappointed yet. All right. Everyone, thank you for listening. I want to thank Sal and John and Jeffrey.
You don't have to thank me.
I got nowhere else to go.
And Mr. Mark Beatty for hosting us as always,
and his magnificent mane of hair.
Oh, is it Jose here? Is the last one? It was Eric, like there were
Norton
like
leave.
Yeah, there was like 20 people.
Norton
here.
Had his cake and left.
Yeah, yeah. thank you to Mike Norton for bringing me birthday cake.
Happy birthday, great.
And you for bringing pizza. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That Red Wings pizza.
Yeah.
Jeez.
That's what I'm talking about.
She's got.
Oh, that's right there.
I know I've got
issues. You're bipolar in your sports love anyway. You go from the Rams to wearing a Bears jersey. You're not you can't talk about anybody's love for sports because
we're not talking about football. We're talking about hockey.
This week it'll be the Blues and next week it'll be the Blackhawks.
I'm the Blues.
Please give me a break.
Oh yeah,
okay, I was gonna say.
I'm a Sox fan. I'm a Cardinals fan. I'm a Bears fan.
Man, they're too close to St. Louis and they don't know where they're real.
Yeah, they're all bipolar.
Cardinals are my team. I'm married to a Sox fan. So whatever. There's.
I like the Rams as long as they had Kurt Warner, but then now I'm a Arizona Cardinals fan because they're Cardinals.
I like whoever's winning.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Well,
perceptive eye of Jeffrey
the only reason
Brown
he's wearing a Bears jersey is because even though the Bears suck, they're still better than the friggin' Rams.
I like whoever has the best free agent signing.
I'm a big Buffalo Bills fan now. All right, before I get torn down anymore here, I'm going to sign off. Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week
and
weekend.
I know you were.
I'd
give a shit on that.
We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode, the Return of Sal Avenatti.
Oh, Sal's coming back.
It happens again.
Saw him at WonderCon. He was hilarious.
Oh, he's a great guy. He's a great guy.
He just had a birthday, by the way. Happy birthday, Sal.
Did he? Oh, happy birthday, Sal. All right, everyone have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. Be back next Monday. In the meantime.
In between time.
Thank you, sir. We'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
The views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individual is expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009. It looks so-